And welcome back to Dads on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, men's and boys' issues, and more. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and our special guest today is Dr. Priya Alexander, who is the author of a new book called Eat, Sleep, Play, Love.
Hi, Bill. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. Priya is a practicing GP, a mother of two young children, host of a popular daytime cooking show, Good Chef, Bad Chef, on Channel 10. She is featured as an expert on Sunrise and is a regular contributor to online publications. Dr. Alexander has even hosted a two-part series of the ABC's flagship science program, Catalyst. Priya has drawn lessons from her own lived experience and more generally from her medical practice to distill for us in her new book, Eat, Sleep, Play, Love, some great wisdom and advice. Here we have an unusual guide for parents of children under two. Priya, welcome to Dads on the Air.
Thanks.
So Priya, the title to your new book sounds pretty good, really, for everyone. Eat, Sleep, Play, Love. Is it a mantra for the kids or for the parents?
Basically saying this is all the stuff we're going to cover in the book, and it's filled with nuggets on all those things for the first 2 years of your child's life. So what I've done, Bill, is I've tried to give people the platter they desire when it comes to parenthood, when it comes to big topics like eating and starting solids and milk feeding, when it comes to sleep, when it comes to skincare. I've given people the platter of options, the evidence, the pros, the cons, so that people can make an informed decision for their child and their family. So as opposed to a lot of other books in this space which are quite rigid and say this is the only way to do stuff, I know as a GP that's not the case. I know from my lived experience that what works for me might not work for someone else, that every baby's different. And so I really give people the options and say, look, you know, have a go and see what works. And here's the pros, here's the cons, here's the evidence. But have a crack.
Yes, well, your book takes us, as you say, up to the terrible twos. Is that really a thing these days?
Look, I think definitely children have patches of development. I talk about in the sleep chapter developmental surges where kids have sleep blips when they have brain development. You know, we do know that when kids are hitting two, there's some more autonomy. They're starting to say yes and no. They're developing more of a independence. They realise that they do have some choice and they start to exert some control. So it depends on what you think is terrible, I guess. You know, I find my three-year-old quite a handful at the moment, I have to say. But I think for all of us, different patches are difficult for different reasons.
You describe children in this age group as the kids, we're all on a journey. Do you think it becomes easier when you've travelled the path before? I mean, I know you've got an older child as well, haven't you?
I do, yes. So I have a seven-year-old and a three-year-old. Look, I think that some experience definitely makes the journey a bit easier. What I say to a lot of people in the consulting room, because as a GP, you can imagine I have some very interesting conversations with my patients. I get a real insight into people's lives and it's a huge privilege. But what I do say to patients when I get asked the question, Priya, I'm thinking about a second, we're thinking about it, what do you think, I'm finding it tricky, and what about career? Like, I get asked these things, it's really interesting. But I do say to people, the second time round, I think you know what you need to worry about and what you can kind of let through to the keeper. So I think from that point of view, experience does help. You kind of, you can see the wood from the trees a little bit better. It's a little bit easier, I think.
Yes, that first child, and I'm speaking a bit of my own experience here, but it's there are some actual panic moments where, you know, you've just got to get the doctor, whether it's 10 o'clock or midnight or whatever. Do you still get those sorts of panic calls?
I think with your second, I think later you learn to trust your gut a bit more. Mm. You know what's normal and what isn't. Like, I think particularly with crying, which is a whole chapter in the book, breaking down crying, what's normal, what isn't, going through some common things that people like to blame for crying, like teething and reflux. I think the second time round, you go, oh, no, this is normal. I don't need to panic. I know that, you know, crying tends to peak at the two-month mark. I remember with my first, it settled down. I think you can reassure yourself and that parent gut. You know that it's actually pretty good. because you've lived it before.
I think that's what I most liked about your book, is that it's full of this sensible, practical advice. You advise parents not to overthink, and that's very easy on the first child, because until this book arrived, you really, when you leave the hospital, you don't actually get any good instructions, do you?
You really don't. And I think, I really do think, Bill, that we really talk as parents about pregnancy, the birth. We're kind of, we're so excited. There's this anticipatory excitement, but we don't really prepare for the steps after. I don't think we talk enough about those practical golden nuggets of what's going to happen when the baby's actually here. And like you say, you kind of leave the hospital and there's no guide. You kind of get home and you're like, holy moly, how often am I meant to feed? And how are we meant to swaddle the child? And, are they meant to be in our room? Or are we meant to use a dummy? No one told us that. So I think you're right. There's no guidebook, and you kind of go home, even as two doctors. My husband and I got home and we were like, whoa, no one's checked if we're good to go here. Like, we've just been sent home with this tiny human. So I'm hoping the book can kind of navigate that time for people a little bit better, so people can do it with a bit more confidence.
Yeah, so I mean, it's interesting that humans don't have the instinct to raise children. So it's you're relying on your gut instinct, which is not always right, and I guess the experience from others. And some people don't have parents to guide them either, do they?
Really depends on your support network. And I think what we need to remember as well is that if you do have parents around, things have really evolved, Bill, from when, for instance, I was a child, how we start solids, getting in the common allergy-causing foods into the diet before the age of one to reduce the risk of food allergies, how we put babies to sleep on their back now with temperature regulation. Things have changed. And so you can't really rely on the advice of, like, it's beautiful to have the village and the support network and the practical help and love. But I think, grandparents, I've said to a lot of people that for grandparents this could actually be quite helpful as well.
Yes.
Because things have really changed since when they were parents, and there's a lot of things that they can be on top of now to be an even more kind of helpful caregiver.
And I think, yes, perhaps the most important thing is more so than, what to worry about is what not to worry about. And, I imagine some well-wishing grandparents or neighbours would say, oh, the child should be talking at, 1.5 or 2 or whatever. And that's not necessarily a bad thing.
No, correct. I think people have a lot of opinions, even on things like sleeping through the night. I remember my grandma said to me with my daughter, once you introduce the solid, she'll sleep. And I kind of went, I'm the GP and I know that's not the case, but I was so sleep deprived, Bill, and kind of, in this grey phase of parenthood, I was like, maybe Nan's right.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I think you need to take things with a grain of salt, and opinions are opinions. And what I do in the book is give you the guidelines that, actually developmental milestones like speech and when kids sit and crawl, it's actually quite broad. And what's normal is actually a spectrum. It's not dead on 6 months or 8 months. It's actually a bit of a spectrum.
I think parents would particularly appreciate this coming from you, because I know in my own case, when you're worried about things and then you hear from your doctor, that's not, don't need to worry about that. It is enormously reassuring. So I would recommend to parents to get hold of this book and find out, where you should worry and where you shouldn't. And so
things like, sleep and crying, I think, I really hope. That means a lot. Thank you.
You still have a 3-year-old. I think it was a 2-year-old when you were writing the book. But do you sometimes question yourself when it gets really tough, is it worthwhile having kids?
Normal. Sometimes I constantly question, am I good enough? Am I present enough? Am I reading enough books? Are they getting enough rainbows in their diet? Am I sitting down enough with them and talking to them? I constantly question myself. And I think when you have full plates, and all of our plates are full with different things, if you're working and trying to be a parent, if you're not working and parenting several children or one child and you've got other things on your plate, I think the juggle is hard, regardless of what's on the plate. So yes, I often have moments of really self-doubt of, gosh, am I really good enough for all of this? And I try and normalise that in the book, because I know from my time in the consulting room that I'm not alone in those thoughts.
Well, you really are an inspiration, and I don't think many of us have all those things on our plates that you do with, being on TV so much and then sitting down and writing a book. It's with those two young children. I think it's an amazing testament to you.
Thanks.
Well, look, we might at this stage take a break. We're speaking today with Dr. Priya Alexander, who is the author of a new book called Eat, Sleep, Play, Love, which is a guide for parents of children under two. So, Priya, we always ask our guests if they'd like to pick a song. Have you got a song for us?
I do. I'm a big Fleetwood Mac fan, and I think I'll have to go with Everywhere.
What a great choice, and it's particularly appropriate because it's a song by the late, great Christine McVie as a member of Fleetwood Mac.
Yes, correct. And that was Everywhere by Fleetwood Mac, especially chosen for us today by our guest, Dr. Priya Alexander. Priya is the author of a new book called Eat, Sleep, Play, Love. We were just talking about some of the difficulties you face when you do have a child, and I notice you refer to PANDA, which is an organisation that helps people suffering with depression, and they've come out with a figure of 10% of fathers suffer depression after childbirth. Now, that might be a surprise to a lot of people. Yes, I think so, and that's why I mention it in the book. It's kind of bolded because, you know, I talk about that in the post. Postpartum 6-week check chapter for mums, that actually fathers are not immune to mood disorders in the postpartum period, and I actually see this more often than I think people might think in my consulting room. I think the thing we often don't talk about when it comes to parenthood is that it's a huge change. So you kind of have this life before you have children where you've got structure and control and really autonomy over your life. And when a child comes, things completely flip. You know, there's someone whose care needs surpass yours. Everything's a bit chaotic. You're suddenly sleep deprived. You know, routine for yourself goes out the window. And so I often say to patients at the 6-week check, and that's, you know, mums, dads, whoever's in the consulting room, that we know that change can be traumatic for young kids. So it's like my 3-year-old, you know, taking him from the cot into a big boy bed was traumatic for him. There was change, there were teething issues, he didn't, you know, we had to do a lot of work there to make him feel comfortable. When you've got an infant and you're removing the dummy, if you're using one, that can be slightly traumatic. There's a bit of change there. You know, when kids move homes or go from one classroom to another, they're nervous about a new teacher, that change is traumatic. And that's the same for adults. Like, we're not very kind to adults, but change and all the chaos that comes with parenthood can actually be quite traumatic for adults, and fathers are not immune to that. And so what I tend to see in the consulting room is a myriad of things, but, you know, it's not uncommon for me to hear a male patient of mine say, "Priya, like, I hadn't quite anticipated this shift in our life. I feel like, you know, with my partner being on maternity leave, I'm freaking out about the financial stress. I can't stop thinking about it at night. That can be a big burden." Or it can be there's been a real shift in our relationship and I'm not quite sure how to navigate this. So, yeah, I think it's very important to point out that, you know, this whole journey and the change can really be challenging for everybody.
Yes, well, you get the first shock when you start living with someone or get married to that other person, and then an even bigger shock. And because of this not being recognised, I guess it is a problem for men. And do men actually come and see you in the practice and talk about this?
Absolutely. So I've got, I can think off the top of my head of a couple of patients who I've seen recently who are living this. And I guess that's the privilege of being a GP, that I see patients from so many different walks of life and they give me such a honest, raw insight into their lives as their GP, which is why I just love my job. But it's a privilege. So I get to hear all sorts of things, but certainly people who are struggling with, you know, all the shifts that come with parenthood, and there are so many of them. But yes, I have a couple of male patients I can think of who I've seen very recently who've shared exactly this with me.
So what sort of strategies would you advise to them when it does get like this?
Look, I actually talk about support networks. So, you know, is there anyone that you could debrief to? Some patients will come back and see me, you know, will say, "Let's catch up again in 2 weeks' time just to talk through things again." So it's basically using, you know, this doctor is drug strategy, which is let's just talk it through and keep talking and book some regular reviews. For other people who've got other dads around them who are living a similar phase of life, that can be very powerful, as can actually talking to other support people like parents. So I often say to patients, you know, have you actually talked to your own parents about this or what their experience was, to kind of normalise it and see what strategies there were. But I also think talking to the partner. If you're in a relationship and you're struggling and the shift is hard and you're going, "Oh my goodness, what have we done?" It's not uncommon that the other person is living it too. So I really encourage, if people feel comfortable, actually talking about it in the home. "Are you feeling like this too? This is how I'm feeling. I spoke to Priya. She suggested we talked. Oh, you're feeling like that as well. What could we do? Is there any way we could potentially lock away 30 minutes for ourselves when the baby goes to bed without the TV on where we talk? You know, could we go for a walk together and call your mum in at 4:30 when we know the baby's napping to go for a walk together and a coffee?" Just small things that might help.
Yes, going for a walk, going for a coffee. I like the, there's one slogan you put there at one stage, start low, go slow. And I think I like the idea of that. I mean, you don't expect everything to sort of happen by a miracle overnight and everything's hunky-dory.
Correct. You always got to up-titrate slowly, Bill, with anything. You've got to start low and then slowly push it up and see if you can get to a good level.
Now, you also cover breastfeeding in your book, and you even raise the issue as to whether it might be a contraceptive. Now, I've often wondered about this, but it's probably only about as effective as a rhythm method, isn't it?
It's more effective than that. So we now call that the fertility awareness method, which is following the menstrual cycle, using body temperature tracking, discharge, all these things to kind of use that as a contraception. Actually, lactational amenorrhea, so using breastfeeding, is more effective than that. But, I mean, I talk about in the book that there are really strict criteria you need to tick off if you're going to use that method as a form of contraception. So your baby needs to be less than 6 months old. You need to be exclusively breastfeeding with no big gaps overnight, you know. But, no, it's actually quite effective. I've got many patients who've successfully relied on it. And as you can imagine, it's quite a cost-effective measure. So you're basically feeding the infant and also attaining the contraceptive benefit. So it can kill two birds with one stone.
But I like the way, I mean, obviously that applies for women that are able to breastfeed, but there are a lot of women that, for whatever reason, are not successful at breastfeeding. And but there's no guilt in, there shouldn't be any guilt in that. They should just be able to supplement it some other way. Is that your message?
Yeah, it is. So I do think there's far too much judgment and stigma in the milk feeding space. And I lived that as a mum with both of my kids. I think there's so much pressure on women. And I definitely encountered myself as a patient, some people who were really, I felt, quite judgmental when it came to feeding. And I felt inferior and not good enough because I was having trouble breastfeeding and I was throwing the kitchen sink at it and still failing. And so what I do in the book is I really try and talk about milk feeding without judgment and stigma. And I guess it's important to mention that throughout the book, Bill, there are lots of expert voices. So there's a paediatrician, a paediatric dietitian, pelvic floor physio. But in the milk feeding chapter, I've got an international board-certified lactation consultant and midwife, Amber, who's phenomenal and sees plenty of my patients. But we have a similar ethos, which is that people need to feel supported in this space. There needs to be less judgment and stigma. And I've had so many patients, Bill, who've come and said to me, Priya, I have no idea how to choose a formula product because the same websites I'm going to looking at feeding and milk feeding will not even talk about formula, which is really stigmatising in itself. And so in the book, I actually break it down and go, if you are looking at formula, here's how you choose them. This is what the terms mean. This is how you can prepare it safely. Because I just think, gosh, we don't need more judgment here. There's enough. There's enough already.
You run through some of the common fears that parents might have, and an interesting one, I remember in my own family, when the child is born, sometimes the head shape can be a bit awry, kind of because they've got those soft bones. But again, you say, you know, that's not something you need to necessarily worry about.
Yeah, so I talk about plagiocephaly in the book, which is the flat head patches, and of course through birth, because the bones are so soft and malleable, as the head passes through the vaginal canal, or if, you know, instruments are used, it can affect head shape, which usually settles down. Plagiocephaly, though, that flat head that I commonly see is very common. A lot of people get nervous about it. And yes, we can intervene and we need to sometimes if it's severe, if we start to see rotation of the ears. But most of the time, simple measures, and I talk about them in the book, like tummy time or changing the position of the cot to try and draw your child's vision somewhere else to the other side of the head. Physio input can be really helpful. But don't you think, Bill, there's so much stuff to worry about as new parents? So I get parents going, is this spot normal? Is this patch on the head normal? Is that normal? The toes a bit curly? What do you think of this?
Yeah.
There's just so much. Like, it's overwhelming.
Yes, a little knowledge is sometimes a dangerous thing, isn't it?
But, yes, it is, absolutely.
I remember with my mother, she only had one test, and when the child was born, and she did it five times, but she, you know, wanted to check the number of fingers and toes. And when she found that was all right, everything else fell into place. So.
Correct. Well, do you know what I actually say in the book, which you've probably encountered, but actually, you know, there's this Memfox book, which is beautiful, 10 Little Fingers and 10 Little Toes, that my kids love, that my husband, who's a paediatric hand, you know, surgeon and adult surgeon, he finds, he's like, Priya, not all babies are born with 10 fingers and 10 toes. There are many kids. So I think, you know, even the basic stuff at a six-week check, Bill, and I say it in the book, I'm looking for 10 fingers and 10 toes, and really simple stuff like, you know, the fontanelles being open and can the baby follow and fix a finger, because there's so much, but even the simple stuff. So I'm not surprised that, you know, your mum was relieved when she saw the right number of digits, because that's a win.
Yes. Well, we've mainly, I guess, been speaking about the things that can go wrong. But, I mean, a baby is a normal child, and that is normal. So I guess, you know, we're not, and certainly I'm sure you're not trying to put people off becoming parents.
No, absolutely not. And I talk about the beautiful, beautiful moments of parenthood in the book. At the end, I talk about the raw truths and how wonderful and amazing the journey is. And there's nothing quite like parenthood. I think nothing that quite gives you that real joy and those heart-filling moments where you just step back and, you know, I see my kids do things or kindness or, you know, these gestures that you go, wow, there's nothing that quite makes my soul want to explode like that, seeing my children develop and be kind humans and bring some beauty to the world in their own little way. Parenthood's phenomenal, but I think, you know, what I try and do in the book is go, it's phenomenal, there's lots of medical nuggets and here they are, choose what works for you. And there are some challenging moments, but gosh, it's filled with amazingness as well.
Well, you sound like a very fulfilled person, and I'm already thinking about the next book because I guess you, the next thing you'll get onto is toilet training in some detail.
This is a 3-book deal with Simon and Schuster. So the next one's actually a cookbook, and then I think we're going to venture into the preschoolers because there's a lot there.
Yeah, there is. Well, look, they're all fascinating topics and very practical and sensible, and I can thoroughly recommend this book, Eat, Sleep, Play, Love. So we've run out of time today, but it just remains for me to give a big thank you to our guest. Thank you very much for coming on to Dad's on the Air.
Thank you.
And we'll be back next week with another show. Don't forget, we'd love to hear from any of our listeners. You can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au. Send us an email. We'll be in touch. If you'd like to listen to this show or any of our shows, go to your favourite podcast app or our website, dadsontheair.com.au, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. And so we'll see you next week.